Thank you for being friendly, and let's look into Proverbs. There was a monk who joined a monastery, and this particular monastic order was characterized by the vows of silence that all of the people that lived in this place, the monks, had taken. And there was a monk who joined this particular monastery, and he himself took a vow of silence. That means he was not going to speak. It was going to be silent. A vow of silence, and he would go about his business. He would go about doing the things that they do in the monastery, but he would never talk, and so he did that. And after 5 years, the head of the monastery, the abbot, brought him in and said, well, it's been 5 years since you've been here. I'm going to give you a chance to tell me anything you want to say, but only in two words. And the monk thought about it for a moment, and then he said, bad food. Those are his two words. Food, bad. Well, another 5 years went by, and again, the abbot brought him back in and said, okay, it's been 10 years now. I'm going to give you a chance to tell me what is on your mind. You've got two words. And he said, the monk said, bed hard. Bed hard. Well, another 5 years went by. It's 15 years now, and once again, the abbot brought the monk before him, and he said, what's on your heart? You've got two more words to tell me how it's been for you. And the monk said, I quit. And the abbot said, well, no surprise there. Since you've been here, all you've done is be negative about everything anyway. Negative Nelly, right? Show of hands, how many of you would say that in your life you have been impacted by negativity? You've been impacted by negativity, either discouragement or disapproval or maybe denigration of your character. Show of hands, how many of you have been touched by negativity? Yeah, most of us. Truth is, in varying degrees, each of us here today have been hurt by negative people and or pessimistic self-talk. You know, we can be negative ourselves about ourselves, can't we? So we're either impacted by negative people or by negativity that rises up within us and affects our lives. And when that negativity is chronic, now, you can handle a little bit of negativity, and that's just a part of life. Negative things happen. There are negative people. Negative things are said to you. But when there is chronic negativity in your life, there can be harmful and long-lasting, long-term side effects. For instance, that negativity, chronic negativity, diminishes your value. You know, it just leeches out your sense of identity in God. It really works against the sense, the understanding of the identity, the DNA of God in your life. Also, it demoralizes your courage. If you live under chronic negativity, you're going to lose your courage. You're not going to be willing to step out and to risk, to take the risk necessary to thrive in life. It devalues your opinions. If you live under pessimism, you're not going to think that you have anything to say. People are going to tell you you don't have anything worthwhile to say. It diminishes, it devalues your opinions. It decreases your creativity. It damages your productivity. You know, you show me a person who is not very productive in life, and I will show you a person who one, is either lazy, they've taken on lazy habits, or they have just inherently had laziness within them, and it was never driven from them by those who spoke into their lives. So either A, they are lazy, or B, they have lived under constant negativity. And it has just leached any energy and any courage to be productive in their lives. It damages your productivity. It deflates your dreams. It does away with your hopes and your vision and the things that you want to do in life. And I think worst of all, negativity, chronic negativity destroys your potential. It destroys your potential. As a child of God, as a creation of God, the Bible tells us that we are God's workmanship. His work of art, His masterpiece, His poem, that we were created to do good works, which He prepared in advance for us to do. And when you live under a constant barrage of negativity, it will destroy your potential. Now, we're in Proverbs, and Proverbs doesn't use the word negativity or pessimism. Those are words that have come along later in history. We use them today. But Proverbs does contrast the destructive and the constructive use of our thoughts and our words and our actions. And so I want to give you several of these verses, and I would ask you to write these down, at least the references, to meditate on these this week, and to really think about the power within these verses and the profundity of these verses. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18 says, "Reckless words pierce like swords, but a wise tongue brings healing," contrasting negativity and positivity. Reckless words pierce like swords, but a wise tongue brings healing. Proverbs 15:4, it says, "The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit." Perverse tongue crushes the spirit. Proverbs 17:22, you know this one, "A cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones." Now, not only is that talking about emotionally and spiritually, but there's some physical aspects to negativity as well, some physical ramifications of negativity and positivity according to that verse. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment or so. It affects who we are physically, our physical health. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, a very powerful, profound verse, says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." The power of the tongue, death and life. And that's why it is so vital, vitally important, that we set limits on negativity in our lives. It's a critical thing that we must do as human beings, is set the limits of negativity in our lives, whether that negativity is bubbling up from within us through that negative self-talk that sometimes we engage in, or if it barges in from without through other people. Like home invaders intruding into your life to destroy you, to rob you, if not to kill you. We've got to set limits on negativity. And so let's take a look this morning at how to limit the damage of both internal pessimism and external negativity. Internal pessimism and external negativity. And we're going to start with the external negativity that comes primarily through our relationships. Circumstances can cause negativity as well, and we react to that internally. But by and large, negativity and pessimism comes from people in our lives, from our relationships. And the very first thing that Proverbs would say to us is to be very selective when entering a significant relationship. Be very selective when you're entering into a significant relationship. And I know some of you are thinking, oh, thanks for telling us now. You know, I'm already in one, and it's very pessimistic, it's very negative. You know, this is like shutting the barn doors after the cows have gotten out, right? I'm going to come back to that in a moment or two, but let's just start here. The first thing that Proverbs says is be very careful about getting into relationships, significant relationships with people, whether it's a friendship or a business partnership, a job that you are going to accept, a romantic relationship, a marriage for sure. We are to proceed with caution. Be careful with close relationships. Why? Because you're going to be there for a while. So enter into those relationships with your eyes wide open. Do the work of figuring out what that person is all about, who they are, before you enter into a partnership with them. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 26 tells us, "The righteous choose their friends carefully." Did you get that? The righteous, if you are right, in right standing with God, if you're connecting with God, with who God is and God's word, God's will, you will choose your friends carefully. Now, that's not to say that you're not going to be friendly to some people. I mean, we're to be friendly to everyone, right? But we're to choose our friendships, those close friendships, carefully. Why is that? Because the way of the wicked will lead you astray. If you partner with someone that isn't of the same tribe in terms of your belief in God, your values, if you get into a partnership with someone who is of a negative caustic spirit, that evil, that sin, that wickedness, that fallenness will lead you astray if you're not careful. Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 and 25 says, "Don't make friends with a hothead, Don't associate with one easily angered, lest you learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. Now, it's interesting to me that the Bible is not afraid to tell us, unlike our culture, which says the opposite, the Bible is not afraid to say to us to be narrow, to be intolerant, to be exclusive, to be discriminating, to be discerning about those with whom we're going to do life. You know, tolerance is the buzzword, inclusivity, multiculturalism is the big thing in our secular culture today. The Bible is not that way at all on certain levels. It says be very discerning, be very careful about those kind of partnerships. You know, we would be saved from bad marriages, from bad partnerships, from bad friendships, and probably all of us in this room today have experienced at least one of those. I'm not going to ask you which one, especially if you're here with a spouse and it's a bad marriage, but we've all been affected by all of those marriages, partnerships, friendships, because we didn't heed what the book of Proverbs, what the Bible said about that. And we would be saved from all of that if we would choose those relationships based on a person's character rather than their charisma. We need to choose proven character over flashy charisma. And then often that's the very thing that attracts us into relationships, into partnerships, into friendships, and into marriage. We love the personality. We love the charisma of the person. That's why we get attracted to them instead of looking at the character of the person that we're going to spend a lot of time with. And I'll say this in the next service when most of our students are there, but if you're here today and you're a student or a single person more likely, let me say in particular to you, when entering into a significant relationship, choose carefully. Choose wisely. Do your homework first. Look at their character. Know the person. As they say, measure twice and cut once. I mean, get it right before you commit to this. You get into a covenant with a negative or a toxic or an angry person, you will learn their ways and you yourself will get ensnared by that toxicity. Be careful. That's the first thing Proverbs says. Be careful with the kind of significant relationships that you enter into. Now, what if you're already in a covenantal relationship with a person whose negativity is harmful? What if you're already in that relationship where breaking off that relationship would be dishonoring to God? That is not an option that God gives you. You know, what if your marriage is marked by chronic criticism? You know, what if you're in a relationship with a parent who is continually caustic? Negative, critical, or your Christian friend is perpetually pessimistic. What if you're already there? What if you're already in that relationship? What do you do? That's the rub, isn't it? That's the rub, isn't it? Well, I could do a whole series about how to mitigate the damages of those kind of relationships, but that's not the scope of this sermon this morning. I just don't have time to do that. It would make a great series. So I want to offer you, and this may be the most important thing that I give you today, that the Lord has for you today. I want to make available to you the most helpful resource that I know. It's a book by Les Parrott called High Maintenance Relationships. Years ago, when Lynn and I were here before, as associates, we did a marriage series on this, High Maintenance Relationships. I want you to write this down. And if you can, go home today and order this off Amazon or wherever you order things, right? If you don't have this book, I would recommend that you get this. This is a practical how-to manual for honoring relationships with toxic people. When you're already in the relationship, marriage, family, job, church. This is a how-to to draw some healthy boundaries around the toxicity of these toxic people. If you're covenanted to a wet blanket in a relationship, you're married to a martyr, you know, someone who's always pessimistic about things. If your coworker is a cold shoulder, perpetually giving you the cold shoulder, this will show you how to leverage healthy change in that relationship. This is not about getting out of the relationship. This is not about going home and announcing to your negative spouse, "I'm getting a divorce, Pastor Ray said so." Please, do you hear me saying that? Say no, please say no. No, that's not what we hear you saying. There are some covenants that we've entered into that we need to honor. We dishonor God if we don't. So if you're in one of those, how do you then, you know, draw some healthy boundaries and initiate change within those people who are negatively impacting your life by their pessimism, by their negativity? This is the best resource I know to walk you through step by step. And as you absorb this and really use it with wisdom, God will use this to help you to figure out how to navigate that and to leverage healthy change. But as much as possible, insofar as it depends on you, it's within your scope to do this, set the limits of chronic negativity in your life. Hear me say that. Set the limits to chronic negativity in your life, because it will destroy your hope, ultimately. It will deny your potential. It ultimately will be the death to your spirit. And that is not God's will for you. He doesn't want that for you. That doesn't come under the category of the abundant life that Jesus died and rose from the grave to give you. God created you to need positive input from positive people. He created you to need positive input from positive people, feeding into your spirit to counteract the pessimism that will seep into your soul from sin. We live in a sin-broke world, and there's negativity that happens as a result of that. It's going to come. God created you, recreated you in Christ to need that kind of, to need positive input from positive people to counteract all of that and to help you to thrive and to become what God intends for you to be. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 9 says, "As oil and perfume makes the heart glad, so a sweet friendship refreshes the soul." We need it. We need that. Now, one of the reasons why this, being positive people speaking positive messages, godly messages into our lives, is so critical is that there has been research done that really affirm what the Bible is assuming in what it says, what we've read so far already. But there is an amazing amount of research that has come out in the last 20, 30, 40 years that reminds us why this is so important. And one in particular I want to refer to this morning, it was done out of the University of Chicago, and through their research they demonstrated what is called the negativity bias of the brain. The negativity bias of the brain. Turn to somebody and say, "You have a brain," okay? And he's going to talk about you right now. You really do. There's a negativity bias in the human brain. And the research has found that negatives exert greater impact than positives on our brain. Now that might be surprising to you. That might seem counterintuitive. But negatives actually have a greater impact on your brain, the way you think and the way you respond, than do positives. The brain is more sensitive and more responsive to unpleasant news and cutting or negative remarks. And that's exactly why the negative political ads are so effective. You wonder why they run negative political ads? Huh? Because they work. They impact us more than the positive ones do. Why does the news lead with the negative? It impacts us more than the positive. They understand that. It's why insults and criticisms hurt so much and for so long. Have you ever wounded someone, maybe purposely, maybe inadvertently, and it took forever to win that friendship back? Or maybe you're sitting here thinking about, "Yeah, someone insulted me, hurt me, criticized me, and it's taking a long time, and you're still not over it? Because the brain receives negatives in a more impactful way than even the positives. Our brain has this built-in sensitivity to negativity. And the power of negatives actually increases disproportionately over positives. That is, it's not a one-to-one ratio. One positive doesn't offset one negative. Again, that might seem counterintuitive to you. So for instance, when you tell your wife, "Honey, that was a great dinner. Thanks a lot." And then 5 minutes later, you kind of whisper in a soft voice to her, "By the way, you forgot to turn out the lights again." You know what's just happened? Her brain heard your whisper as a shout. And switch it up. Be true for what a wife says to a husband, what a parent says to a child. Because of the negativity bias of the brain, your whisper sounds like a shout in the brain. The negative completely drowns out the positive. Studies show that our brain needs a higher number of positive inputs than negative ones to counterbalance this built-in negativity bias. Small, frequent positives, by the way, will pack more of a punch than one big positive. The size isn't what counts. You need quantity. That's why, for instance, the typical illustration would be a husband that offends his wife. And what does he do? He goes out and he buys her flowers, right? He thinks that's going to make up for it. Guys, how many of you have found that really worked in the long run? Yeah, don't have to raise your hand on that, okay? One positive doesn't necessarily do the trick. One big positive doesn't necessarily do the trick like you expected. It takes a lot of positives to counterbalance the negative that has been done. So how many, according to research, how many of these positives are needed to offset one negative? Well, the research bears out that it takes at least two positives to overcome a negative. At least two to overcome one. At least two. And what they found out is a study done at the University of Washington by psychologist John Gottman, who says that in a marriage, it takes five positives to one negative. Five positives, five bouquets of flowers to overcome one negative. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 9 tells us, listen to this. You do well to learn this one. Making up with a friend you've offended is harder than breaking through the wall of a fortified city. Have you found that to be true? When you've offended somebody, it is hard to win that friendship back. I want you to listen to Proverbs chapter 15, verse 4 again, and I would challenge you, take this to heart. Cruel and cutting words crush the spirit, but kind words are a tree of life. We need to stop and think about what we're saying, because it does so much good or so much damage depending on the bias of the words, positive or negative. All that to say, this is why, as much as it's possible, as much as it depends on you, get around sources of unceasing positivity and optimistic faith. And by all means, for God's sake, and I don't mean that irreverently, for God's sake and for the sake of the amazing people in your life. By the way, the people in your life, in close relationships, the people in your life are amazing people. They really are. Maybe your view of them has been impacted by stuff, by your own negative bias, your own sin, or maybe stuff that they've done and you just don't see them as amazing anymore. But listen, your husband, your wife, your children, your grandchildren, the people that you work with, the people you work for, the people you go to church with, they are amazing people with amazing potential. And so for their sake and for God's sake, commit to be a person of optimistic faith and flowing praise. Commit to be that person, because it is a tree of life that ultimately will bring out God's best in them and in you. I promise you that. Commit to that, and it will happen. God will see to it. He's promised it. He's declared it in His Word, and it will come to pass. Now, I want to switch gears just a bit here as I draw this to a close. And given that we need to set limits to negative input, and given that we need to get around sources of positivity, we're still going to get bombarded on a daily basis, if not an hourly basis, with negative input from this sin-broken world that we live into. You're going to walk out of these doors, maybe even before you get out of the church today, and you're going to be impacted by, perhaps, by negativity. For sure, out in the world, when you go back home, when you go into the workplace tomorrow, to school, whatever you do, we get bombarded with negativity because we still live in a world broken by sin. And so there's going to be negativity. You can't prevent the birds from flying overhead. But as Martin Luther said, you don't have to let them build a nest in your hair. And so that's going to be my challenge to you. You're in a negative world, but you don't have to let that negativity take up residence in the room of your heart. And so there are two things that I'm going to ask you to remember and to act upon as you experience the negative impact of a sin-broke world, whether it's coming at you or up from within you as you go about your life this week. Two things. First of all, remember this, that God is less interested in your negative circumstances than in your positive faith response to those circumstances. You know, we kind of focus on the circumstances and we think that's the deal. You know, God is not as concerned about those as with how you respond to them. That doesn't mean He doesn't care about what you go through. He just is more concerned about how you respond to your circumstances. God created you as a responsible being. Responsible means response able. He created you as a responsible being, and you are able to choose your response to any negative that comes your way. You know, the world and the devil can take away just about anything, any ability, any freedom, any resource that you have. But He can't take away your ability to respond. You are response able. And it is up to you to choose the right response, especially as it relates to negativity coming at you or coming up from within you in response to a circumstance. When you leave here today, you don't get to choose necessarily what you're going to go through, but you do get to choose always how you will go through that circumstance. You don't get to choose your circumstances, but you get to choose how you will go through those circumstances. One of the classic scriptures to this is found in Genesis chapter 4. It's the story of Cain and Abel. And Cain is very upset by some circumstances. He's feeling negativity from the circumstances. He's offered a sacrifice to God. And so did his brother Abel, who apparently is right there. Abel offered a sacrifice and it was pleasing to God, but Cain's sacrifice was not accepted by the Lord. And he began to get very upset, very angry about this, so much so that he had murder in his heart toward his brother, who did nothing wrong. Cain was upset by these circumstances. And so God comes to Cain in verse 6, and He says this, and what He said to Cain, God says to you as well. He says, if you do what is right, you will be blessed. But if you don't do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you. Sin desires to rule over you. This week, when you go out there, sin will desire to rule over you. It's crouching at your door. You must rule over it. You must choose responses that will allow you to rule over it. Do what is right, God says. Do what is right. I like how one anonymous writer put it. I put this on the screen for you. I think this is very profound. He says, we cannot choose how many years we will live, but we can choose how much life those years will have. We cannot control the beauty of our face, but we can control the expression on it. We cannot control life's difficult moments, but we can choose to make life less difficult. We cannot control the negative atmosphere of the world, but we can control the atmosphere of our minds. Too often, we choose to control the things that we cannot. Too seldom, we choose to control what we can. And what can we control? Our attitude, our response. You don't choose what you go through. However, you do choose how you will go through it. Remember that when you leave this place today. You don't get to choose what happens. You get to choose how you respond to it. The second thing that I would say is to remember this. Since God has a purpose for negative circumstances in your life, reframe the way you see those circumstances. Just refocus, reframe the way you look at your negative circumstances. John Maxwell said, "I may not be able to change the world I see around me, but I can change the way I see the world within me." God is in control. He chooses what you go through. So refuse to react in ways that dishonors His presence in your life. Because when you dishonor His presence in your life with a bad reaction to things, it will thwart His plan. If you dishonor His presence, that will thwart His plan for what He wants to do in your life through those circumstances. Do what optimistic faith calls you to do. Psalm chapter 34, verse 14 says, "Turn away from sin and do what's right." The psalmist doesn't say, do this or do that, or, you know, here's five steps to doing what's right. He just says, do what's right. You know what's right. So do I. Turn away from sin and do what's right. You know, I was thinking about how we often refer to people who are negative and pessimistic, that they often see, you typically see the glass what? Half empty, right? We talk about negative people, pessimistic people. They see the glass half empty. Positive people see the glass half full. Well, the answer to people who see the glass half empty is not to see the glass half full. That's not what I'm talking about. Optimistic faith, on the other hand, takes the half-empty glass and sees the opportunity to pour the rest of it out as life-giving water. That's doing the right thing. Let me give you, for instance, Dr. Carl Menninger, who is the famous psychologist founded the Menninger Clinic in Topeka, Kansas. Wonderful, wonderful man. Was giving a lecture on mental health. And after the lecture, there was a question that he was asked by someone who said, "How would you advise someone who was just burned down by the weight of crushing negativity, that they were about to break under the strain of crushing negativity?" And this is what he said. He said, "Well, that's easy." He said, "I would advise them, here's my prescription for them. I would advise them to leave their house immediately, find someone who needed their help, and begin to help that person." That's pouring the half-empty glass out as life-giving water. When you do that, when you do what is right, when you act in right ways, when you do the right thing, the right feelings, the right emotions will follow. A proven psychological principle of life. Act in faith, and feelings of faith will follow. Do the right thing, and you will feel the right way. Refocus from the negative and see the positive. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 30 says, "Live right, and you will eat from the life-giving tree, and others..."